We've got to build so much strength in building our community that if they come to get one person, they're gonna have to mess with us all. That's what we got to do. That's what we got to do. We've got to build so much strength inside our community so that when LBJ says, come here, boy, tomorrow we say, hell no, we ain't going.
Yo, this is the man Fibian Charlie Tuna, and you're now listening to Hard Knock Radio, where you can find news, views, and hip hop.
What the deal, yo? This is your girl Queen Latifah, original flavor unit, Jersey's finest, and you listening to Hard Knock Radio.
On the move, this is Pam Africa on Hard Knock Radio, the station of resistance. Down with this rotten ass system. Stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio on KPFA.
That's what I'm talking about. Do it good now. Keep it right dead in the pocket. Just keep it right dead in the pocket, y'all. Keep it right dead in the pocket.
Don't call no guns, just keep loving, because love Classic song from the one and only Chuck Brown, the godfather of go-go, who we lost last week, May 16th, and we wanted to pay a little bit of tribute to him. He was born 1936 in August. He is the unofficial mayor of Washington, D.C., Chocolate City. His music, go-go, became something that underscored, personified Washington, and he will be missed. We know the Billboard Music Awards didn't acknowledge him while they acknowledged everybody else, but we wanted to pay special attention to Chuck Brown. His music was a soundscape, was a building block for early hip hop. And so what you're going to hear over the next few minutes is an interview that was done at Howard University. It was an oral history project with Chuck Brown speaking for himself. So without further ado, let's hear the words of the immortal godfather of go-go, Chuck Brown.
So by the time 1976 rolled around, I had been working on this thing. You know, we were doing top 40, and I used to have to break down and do the percussion. And when you break down and do that percussion, you know, add them congos up in there and them timbales and that Los Latino flavor, mm-hmm. which I stole from them when I left. Everybody started getting into that. We were doing 20, 25 songs a night. When I started breaking down doing that percussion, mm-hmm. didn't have to do 25 songs a night no more. They love that percussion and the way, you know, me talking over it, a little bit of rhyming, way before rap ever came out. You know, I could have been rhyming then, rhyming then, you know mm-hmm, what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I said, I know they don't want me talking all night, rhyming all night. You know, I'm not that good at rhyming anyway, but what little bit I'm doing is catching on. Mm-hmm. Next thing I know, rappers, before rap ever came out, coming to my show. We break that percussion down and start communicating with the audience, call and response, calling names, birthdays. They calling back. They bring me notes, write notes. Chuck, say this about me, Howard University, blah, blah, blah. And I'm mentioning all that, Northwest, Northeast, all four corners of D.C. Everybody loved it. Next thing you know, all the tables and chairs in all those places that we were playing, tables and chairs started disappearing. The mink coats and the suits started disappearing.
Because they had been coming all dressed up. And
they parted too hard.
Mm-hmm.
They can't dress up now. You know what I mean? All the tables and chairs disappeared. That's what really made me feel good. Everybody dancing.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it was, you turned it into like a house party.
Absolutely.
And you made it very personal mm-hmm. in terms of mentioning somebody's name
right.
or birthday or let's do this, that, and the other thing.
Absolutely.
And right. and because you cut down on the number of songs, mm-hmm. it was the transition between songs
right.
that really kind of made it one long night of partying.
That's what it was. You know it. She knows exactly what it is.
And yeah. Now, did that evolve? Was it just a natural thing that you night after night, you sort of mm-hmm. see how this would happen, this?
Right.
Or was it a conscious kind of, okay, I'm going to start doing this, mm-hmm. and this, like a, mm-hmm. you know?
I was experimenting because, you know, back in those days, they had go-go clubs, go-go girls. But they didn't have go-go music. And I said, maybe I can call this song, style of music go-go. I'm trying to create some here. You know, James Brown, he created his own sound. Everybody had their own sound. But I'm right here in this town here. I think I can make this sound work.
I think it's hard for people to understand that there could have been go-go girls and go-go, you know, mm-hmm. all sorts of different kinds of go-go,
mm-hmm.
but there was no, at the time, no actual go-go music.
Music, right.
Where did Go-Go come from?
Well, the idea came to me when, you know, Smokey Robinson had out a song called Going to the Go-Go, da dee that 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 dee da dee do. So now, that gave me an idea to call this particular type of music Go-Go, because it just keeps going and going and going, and it don't stop. We used to take breaks when we were doing Top 40. Now, we don't take no breaks. We might play 3 hours without stopping. 2 hours, 2.5 hours outside. I've done it many times. Matter of fact, we did it again not too long ago. You know, play just that long, keep people on the floor that long. We just break down that now and then, might do a slow song. Mm-hmm. Might do a slow song, everybody get close together, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But then they start, got to the point, they sweating so hard, they don't want to get close together. They don't want to get close together. As a place that they call a breaking room out there. We was doing all those Top 40. I was doing Slider, Family Stone, Jane Brown, everything we that came on the radio. If it was hot, we do it. In the top 10, we do it. Number one, right on down. And it worked. It worked. And we had people coming from Frederick, Richmond. They heard about this Go-Go. You get 1,500 people in there, 1,600 people in the burger room every Wednesday night. And that's when I knew that this thing was going to work. And when that Go-Go started catching on, it caught on at the Maverick Room in 1976. That's when it really started catching on. And
you could tell when you say it started catching on. Mm-hmm. What were the signs for you that this was really something that is going to have staying power?
That Peter, the people didn't want to sit down, and they loved to hear me talk to them, and they would talk back to them. What's going on right today? Y'all feel all right? Yeah, yeah. Want some more? Yeah, yeah. It ain't time to go. Well, then stay on the floor. You know what I'm saying? I was doing all that, and they loved it. So that's when I knew it was going. my own band together in 1966.
The Soul Searchers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
how did you come up with that name?
Well, I came up with that name because I was going to name myself. I said, okay, I'm going to name myself the Soul Searcher. And but then I thought about it. I said, now, what would the musicians that work with me, what would they think? They would think that I have a super ego or something, calling myself the Soul Searcher. But the reason for me naming myself the Soul Searcher was because I'm looking for some musicians with some soul. It's just that simple, you know. I'm looking for some guys that had soul. And but then, after I thought about it, I said, maybe I should name the whole band the Soul Searchers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the guys that work with me wouldn't get the impression that I have an overwhelming ego, because everybody has to have a certain amount of ego in order to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I don't want them looking at me like that. So the Soul Searchers, one big name.
Were you nervous about going off on your own and starting your own band?
Of course I was nervous, but I was very confident also. Very confident, because the experience that I had gotten with Joe, there's no way that I could miss doing my own thing with my own band. There was no way. I just, you know, that's how strongly I believed in myself at that point in time. That's why I tell these youngsters today, you know, whatever you want to pursue, be aggressive and consistent at it, and well, you could be successful.
What was the music scene like here in the D.C. area when
top
you were...
40,
mm-hmm.
top 40, anything that came on the radio. When I put my band together, we had a sound. I learned to sound like the radio. Any tunes that we did off the radio, they had a sound just like I learned that year after year. We got better and better to play those songs just like the record. And if you didn't do James Brown, you wouldn't get that gig no more. Well, James Brown was the hottest thing happening. Otis Redding, Wilson Pickett, Smokey Robinson, you know, it was all happening then, you know what I mean? And I learned to be, I became a perfectionist. I wanted to be perfect, but you know, nobody's perfect, but I was close. And the next thing I know, in the next few years, we were like, it was calling us the number one band in the city, doing top 40.
Did that frustrate your creativity in the sense of, you know, that you got mm-hmm. obviously extraordinarily good
yes.
at doing other people's
yes.
music?
Absolutely.
What about your own music?
You see, I wasn't into my own music then. You follow me? I had a lot of ideas. I had a lot of things that I wanted to try. I had a lot of creativity in mind, but if you get on the stage and play something that nobody's never heard before, and listen to it, but they might accept it, and they might not if it's not on the radio. Back in those days, the fans were not into originality unless they heard it on the radio. It had to be something that catch their ear, they've heard before or whatever. So we did top 40.
Mm-hmm.
But as time went on, I was going down Lorton then every year, 2-3 times a year, and playing for the inmates. And some of them that I left down there were still down there. A lot of them
mm-hmm.
go out and come back, in and out, you know what I mean? And the ideas came to me to create my own sound. It stayed with me. And in 1972, I wrote a song called We the People. And
tell me about We the People. What was it?
It was, you know, like in those days, people were sort of, some of them were violent, and there was a lot of political issues going on. And I decided to write a song, when are the people going to be able to see it together, be able to live together? Loving one another can be easier than lifting a feather. If you can love your brother can love another. Whenever we the people understand one another, we the people can love each other. That's what I wrote. And it was just a hook. You know, I'm not a songwriter. I can write hooks. And that was a pretty good hit. And the next tune I wrote a couple of years later was Shake a Tambourine, Go On, Get Yourself a Whistle, and Shake a Tambourine. It's about riding bicycles. The kids were riding bicycles. I had horses. They was blowing horses coming to my shows. They had tambourines. They come to my shows with tambourines and whistles. I let them blow all the whistles. I wrote a song about it, you know? Max Kidd, another inspiration in my life, great inspiration, Max Kidd. I've been knowing him since the middle 50s, and he was a great producer. And Max Kidd gave me the idea to write a song called Blow Your Whistle. You see? Mm-hmm. I said, you got the lyrics to it? He said, no, just the title. You go from there. Blow your whistle. You know? And that's what I did.
Talking to the kids and the that became a pretty good one. Talking to the hippies and the Watergate hiders. Talking to the people getting down at the go-go. Shake a tambourine, go and get yourself a whistle and blow. Shake a tambourine and blow. Any kind of whistle, let's blow. Suck it to your biscuit and blow. Got a good diploma from the hippie school, y'all. Got a good religion, don't you be nobody's fool, y'all. Whoever got a dollar got more than me. I just wanna holler when my soul feel free. Now blow.
If you're just tuning in, it's Hard Knock Radio. David D hanging out with you this afternoon, paying tribute to the one and only godfather of go-go, Chuck Brown. Today he is being buried in Washington, D.C. We wanted to give him a proper send-off, a musical tribute, so to speak. And right now we are playing excerpt from a big interview he did at Howard University. He is talking about his life in prison and how he learned to play guitar. Here's Chuck Brown.
They had all kinds of programs for you. Whatever you wanted to get into, you could get into it. You've got lawyers come out of Lloyd. I can go down to the courthouse right now and I can show you some old guys that was in Lloyd with me 45, 50 years ago. They're lawyers. Because most of the guys that go down there, they're smart. A lot of guys are very intelligent, educated. If you're not educated, you can get educated while you're down there. This is what I'm saying about Lloyd. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of trades you could be a carpenter, you could learn a type, you could become a steel worker, you could become an architect, an artist.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so many programs that you could get into.
And what did you
get? I got into tailoring. I could make suits and top coats. Never had many clothes, but I learned how to make me some clothes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
foundry worker, making license plates for cars. It was just so many programs. Peter Green, he was an educator, a counselor. I became a semi-counselor because I was funny. You know what I'm saying? I keep guys laughing. I'm Charlie Brown, you know what I mean? 6 weeks, I mean 6 months after I went down there, I had given an inmate 5 cartons of cigarettes to make me a guitar. They made guitars down there, you know, and I bought one of them. And I sit in my dormitory, sit on my bunk and learn to play it. And I had help with people like Bill Walker, God rest his soul, he's passed on now. Scotty, he's passed on. A great guitar player, used to play with Count Basie. Joe Jennifer, another great guitar player. All these guys was down there for drugs, you know, the heroin thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught me quite a bit, and I learned to play quite well. And then when I got good enough to get on the show, they had shows every Saturday in the auditorium.
Uh-huh.
I got good enough to get on the show because all the guys in the dormitory, I kept singing and playing. And, man, Charlie Brown, you got to get on the show, man. We want to see you over there, man. Okay, on Saturday, showtime is 5 o'clock. Chow time is 5 o'clock. The first Saturday that I went over there, I guess I made such an impression. They had me back the next Saturday, and it wasn't nobody in the mess hall. Huh? They had to shut down the mess hall. Well, it was a few Muslim brothers in the mess hall, but everybody was in the auditorium. Charlie Brown on the show, you know? And they changed the chow time from 5 o'clock, see, showtime 5 o'clock, to 7:30. Chow time is 5 o'clock. They changed chow time to 8 o'clock because they wanted to buy the mess hall. I was on the show. Now, this told me something. This told me, and all the inmates were encouraging me and kept telling me, you know, keep up good work, man. And Charlie Brown, you get out of here, man. We're going to see you back in here the next couple of months, man. We're going to see you out there on stage somewhere. I mean, okay. And that it happened just like that, you know.
Police man is on a criminal season. What is he doing in here? I said the police man is on a criminal season. What is he doing in here? The police man is on a criminal season. What is he doing in here? The police man on the criminal scene. What in the hell is he doing in here? Behind the door, cops ran in a danger and after. Brother Mo, he began to shout, Rondo,
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 Rondo.
Hey, the police man at the door,
Rondo,
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 Rondo.
Hey, the man, he won't let me go,
Rondo,
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 Rondo.
Hey, the run as fast as you can. Right in jail. Hide the crystal bomb by the pistol. You know they want to find no evidence. When you get home, you get in bed. Call the doctor when you dry your hand. Ask your mama to invent a lie. You know you're gonna have a good alibi. Rondo,
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 Rondo.
He's the police man at the door.
Rondo,
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 Rondo. The man, he won't let me go. Rondo,
Rondo,
as fast as you can.
Rondo,
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 Rondo. Police man knows my plan.
Joey, 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 Joey.
They're gonna give me the third degree. When the judge asks me how I plead, I'm not guilty, sir, most decidedly. You can tell by a single glance, I'm just a victim of circumstance. I'll be gone by the break of day, if the judge believes what I say.
Rondo,
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 Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo, Rondo
the striped suit. Run, Joe!
Run, Joe!
Run, Joe!
Run, Joe!
Policeman at the door. Run, Joe!
Run, Joe!
Run, Joe!
Run, Joe!
The police won't let me go. Run, Joe!
Run, Joe!
Run, Joe!
Run, Joe!
You got to run as fast as you can.
In 1976, I started playing Busta Blues. I wrote this song. I was uptight. I felt uptight. I need to loosen up here. You know, that's when Go-Go started catching on. I just felt like writing a song called Busta Blues. They had a TV show on called Busta Blues, you know, and I said, I hope we won't get no feedback off of this, but I wanted to call this song Busta Blues because the feel of it, the way I wrote it, it's busting. You know what I'm saying? It's just busting and it hits you right off the bat, you know? And so I went in the studio and we recorded it.
Why did you wait that two-year period to actually record Bustin' Loose?
Because I wasn't satisfied with the way it sounded. And the crowd was really getting down off it. They was loving it. And they was, I said, well, I'm going to take this in the studio. I want it to be right.
But
Skip Fennell was on keyboard.
Wasn't your manager saying, excuse me, but you know, somebody may take this and record it before you get,
uh-huh.
Wasn't he pushing
I
you?
I didn't have a manager.
You didn't have a manager?
No, I've had several managers, but they weren't there very long, you know, because, what should I say? I did better with the band, booking the band. I kept the band working. I got the band more money, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that was the way that is. Now I got the greatest manager ever. You know, Mr. Tom Gover, well,
uh-huh.
Can't touch it, you know what I mean? So
when you went in and you recorded Bustin' Loose, were you surprised at the response that song got?
Absolutely, because Dave Coffin was my negotiator at that time. He was about to become my manager, and he was a very wise man. James Purdy produced that record, the greatest producer I have ever worked with, other than the young man that I have now, Chucky Thompson and John Gotti. Those are two great producers. But James Purdy was the first one that really produced me. He did it. As a matter of fact, Joe Tate was the one that produced We the People and Blow Your Whistle and all that. Solid Earth. James Purdy came in and produced Busta Loose, every tune on there. This man sat in that studio and worked miracles with his ideas.
And it started going up on the charts?
Oh, yes. Hit number one before I could realize. All over the country, all across Europe, number one. I saw it as a door opener. I saw it as an inspirational track to other musicians around the city that would be interested in trying this groove. I saw it as the best thing that I'd ever done, of course, and it opened the doors, and it encouraged a lot of young musicians around town. You see, go-go is not hard to play. A lot of young musicians around town that are really not experienced in playing the instrument that much, they can play go-go. You know, if you got rhythm and you got the feel and the desire to want to play this music, you don't have to have a lot of experience. You don't have to be a great musician to play it. It's easy to play. Top 40 cover tunes are the hardest thing in the world to play. We got to play somebody else's tune, you see. And the style of go-go, any group that comes out that can play this groove, they can develop their own sound, their own distinction between the next go-go band. But now I've heard some that I couldn't tell the difference between this band and that band. But as time goes on, you know, they realize this and they eventually develop their own sound.
Bustin' loose, baby, do your thing. Talkin' about bustin' loose. won't sing. Bust it loose, baby, do your thing. Give me the bridge, y'all.
A preacher, you know what I mean? I could have been preaching up to now, but somehow or another, I lost interest.
In uh-huh.
Met a little girl, of course. You
of
know,
course, of course.
I passed to the eighth grade, but I didn't go back.
Now, yeah. Why didn't
and
you
all
go
my
back?
Teachers was crazy about me because I used to draw pictures of them. You know what I'm saying? I was major in history and arithmetic. I was very good at that. And reading. I was the number one reader in my class. And the reason... the reason I stopped going to school, well, I just told you, you know, I left home and run around with the wrong crowd. And I got in a little trouble here and there. Nothing big until I got bigger and older. And that's when I started getting in big trouble.
You know. Mm-hmm. But you just decided at, you know, what were you, 12, 13 years old, that you mm-hmm. didn't want to keep going to school?
Right.
So you just dropped out once you got to the eighth grade.
Right.
How did your mother feel about that?
She didn't like that at all.
I bet she didn't.
No, indeed. And you know, I left home and I didn't.
I understand that it was the influence of a 17-year-old girl.
Absolutely. How'd you know that? I was 13, she was 17.
Uh-huh.
So I'm a man now. I ain't going back to school. You know what I'm saying? I didn't realize how much I needed that education.
Getting ready to wrap things up, checking out the sounds of Chuck Brown. Rest in peace. Today he is being buried in Washington, D.C., his home, the godfather of go-go. And we left out of here with one of my favorite songs from him, 2001, the theme to 2001, as he talked about his band was great at recreating popular songs, and of course this was one of them. So anyway, we're out until tomorrow. Hard Knock Radio signing out. Peace out, Mr. Chuck Brown. You gave us a lot of fond memories. We out.